from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Pope Francis arrives in Africa with a message of hope, peace, and reconciliation. His trip comes just as ASSI Africa, EWTN's latest news agency, begins its work of bringing Catholic news of Africa to the world. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Alejandro Bermudez, Executive Director of Catholic News Agency and their sister news agencies in the ASSI group. Plus, Bernie Sanders recently proposed promoting abortion around the world as the best way to curb population growth. Billionaire philanthropist Melinda Gates has said promoting contraception around the globe is the best way to empower women in developing countries. What do they get wrong? We find out from Register contributor Mary Fiorito. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by my co-host Matthew Bunsen, Senior Editor of the Register. As Pope Francis travels on what the Register has called the 3M Africa trip to Mozambique, Madagascar, and Mauritius, we look to ASSI Africa for the latest news. Alejandro Bermudez, the Executive Director of the ASSI Group, joins us now. Alejandro, welcome back to Register Radio. You recently came back from Africa, which is, of course, where Pope Francis is now. You visited Nairobi, which is in Kenya, to launch the start of ASSI Africa. So tell our audience, what is ASSI Africa?
Well, thank you for having me, Jeanette. Most of our audience probably knows, is that EWTN News includes a network of Catholic agencies in different languages. And for the first time, we decided to create a news agency that more than based on language is based on a geography, on a specific place. Right now, ASSI Africa is the new family member of the EWTN News family, and the recent one, and I can tell you in these first days of, or middle, if you want, middle of the trip of Pope Francis, is turning into a surprising success by basically reporting in English and French everything that is happening with the Pope's trip.
That's right. So ASSI Africa is, I mean, it's in its newest of days because it was really just launched in the middle of the summer. And here we have a Pope's trip, you know, Pope Francis in Africa. So it's really kind of trial by fire. But this is a veteran crew that you have over there, though.
Exactly. So we have Father Don Bosco Onyala, who used to be the director of news agency from the African Bishops Council that unfortunately was not able to take off. So he was very happy to join forces and to join EWTN News and start a news agency, having the experience and the connections, because as you know, Africa is a very complex continent with far more countries than people know there are. You know, there are 56 countries in Africa, so it's a very large continent. And he had the connections to cover everything that is happening in Africa, or at least as much as possible, both in English and in French for now. And we're hoping that a year from now, we will be able to publish the news stories from ASSI Africa in Portuguese, which is the third official language of the Catholic Church in Africa.
So, Alejandro, why was it so important for you, who you know directs this very large group of agencies throughout the world? Why was it so important to have a group in Africa?
Well, I had the opportunity some time ago to go to South Sudan. As you know, is the newest country in the world after it separated and became independent from Sudan. And I realized that in the midst of a situation of one of the poorest countries in the world, most complicated in terms of civil war, poverty, migration, refugees, and so forth, the only reliable institution that was there was basically the Catholic Church. And Catholics where a key component of the development and the options, if there is any option for the future for the continent. And thanks to meeting people from Uganda and Kenya and so forth, I became impressed by something that we know just by the numbers, which is where is the Catholic, you know, the global Christianity, if you want, growing up is in growing in numbers steadily is in Africa. The Pope is visiting now a country, Madagascar, that is known for its incredible number of vocation to the priestly and religious life. So there is a much more than just violence and diseases and all the kind of news that we associate with Africa. So I thought this was an incredible opportunity. I got the support from our CEO, Michael Warsaw, and we decided to go forward.
Alejandro, Pope Benedict XVI referred to Africa, I think back in 2009 or 2010, as a kind of spiritual lung for a world that's struggling a bit to breathe right now, at least in the area of faith. Your experience in Africa revealed a very vibrant Catholic Church there. And from your perspective, as somebody who really sees the global dimensions of things, what do you see the role of Africa being in this century and beyond?
I see, honestly, Matt, is basically the vibrancy itself. You know, the fact that it's an incredibly vibrant church. Excuse my English, my poor English pronunciation, but how vibrant it is in itself. And it has several dimensions. You can see this in the fact that Africa is not only having significant numbers of missionaries to do mission in their own continent, but they are having missionaries that are being sent abroad. You probably are aware of some parish in the United States that probably has an African pastor. Right. And especially in Southeast Asia, the African missionaries are doing an incredible great job, not only priests, but especially religious and religious nuns. And and add to that the fact of a very vibrant self-conscious laity and an incredibly vibrant youth. I was surprised to join in the different parishes that I visited when I was in Uganda, in Kenya, in South Sudan, to see these youth groups. They are huge, are super large. You have 200 kids, 150 kids in just one parish, and the next parish is not far away, at least in the urban areas. So, yes, there are a lot of problems. There are a lot of there is a lot of poverty. These are countries that are fairly new in the world scene and have several problems associated with that: corruption, violence, human rights violations, and so forth. But there is a tremendous amount of hope among Catholics. They are really self-aware that they have a mission in their own continent, and that is really energizing.
This is obviously something that it probably will give the journalist of ASI Africa great joy to cover, that vibrancy. It's so often, as we've geared up for this trip of Pope Francis to Africa, you end up hearing of the tragedies of Africa, the conflict, the war. You hear of the environmental problems like deforestation and things like that. But those things exist. Obviously, those are great challenges that need to be overcome. But what you've described is actually a beacon of hope for the church, and it seems like it's such a wonderful opportunity for ASI Africa to highlight those very things. I know in my conversations with Father Don Bosco, when I met him down in Birmingham, it was just a pleasure to get to know him and to hear his own vibrancy and passion for telling the stories of the church. Alejandro, if we watch the Pope's trip this week in the next couple of days going forward, what should we be looking for? I mean, the secular media might cover, you know, the usual narrative of conflict or of things that we're sort of used to hearing that are sometimes a little bit depressing coming out of Africa. If we had to read between the lines and really see why the Pope keeps going there, what should we be looking for?
I think we should be looking for these signs of hope, of the role of a region, of a continent, or specific countries that have many difficulties, but that have, as I said, incredible energy. So so far, the Pope is pointing out to some of the important things for the future of the Church, you know, vocations, ministry, the role of a church in transforming society, of Catholics transforming society, like these many places of charity and mercy that have been highlighted by his visit to these places. So when the trip started, I read the headline of a major secular newspaper here in the U.S. saying that the Pope was flying to Africa to push his environmentalist agenda. You know?
Right.
And unfortunately, if we're covering the events from that perspective, we're basically ignoring and canceling the truth about what the Pope is actually doing, which is visiting basically this energetic Catholic Church and encouraging it to go forward, to keep growing, and to keep being a key component of the societies in which they are, so in which Catholics are. So I think we should look from that perspective. This is a Pope that is not looking for a platform here to deliver some kind of message to the world. But he's talking to the local churches. And, of course, he has had, as always, ecumenical encounters and so forth as part of the program, because in some of these places, like the Mauritius Island, the Catholics are not a majority in the country. But otherwise, he's giving a message of hope to Catholics and a call to commitment to leave a 100% Catholic integral life.
Yeah, absolutely. I like you, I look forward to telling those stories that aren't getting told by the secular media. And one of the stories, I think, also with this trip, and the Pope talks about the ideological colonization, you know, and that's where the West often tries to push our own agendas onto developing countries. And in Africa, that typically is the West pushing the agenda of abortion or contraceptives or also same-sex marriage and really destroying the family, which is so strong there. Alejandro, in your visit there, and we're just about out of time, but in your visit there, what did you witness in terms of this, the vibrancy of family life?
Well, I witnessed two things, is that the church is preaching the truth about family, which is complicated. It's sometimes in originally polygamic societies, but the message is getting strong, and you see how Catholics are committing to a Catholic life. But I see also a hope in the way the bishops understand the role of the family, and they're extremely protective of that. You have a tremendous amount of very brave bishops that are defending the truth of the church and their people against these colonizing movements.
Excellent. Well, Alejandro, I'm always grateful for the work that you have done for the church globally, because in the work at ASI Group, all of the Catholic news agency and the other news agencies in different languages, it has really brought Catholic news to all the corners of the world, and I'm truly grateful for that. It also makes the work at ncregister.com a lot easier, because we're able to use the stories that you provide from around the world. So thank you very much for that work and for sharing it with us here on Register Radio.
Thank you for having me, Jeanette, and thank you, Matt.
God bless.
And please, I invite all of our listeners to go to ASI Africa and check out the website there. It's ACIAFRICA.org. When we come back, Matthew and I talk to Register contributor Mary Fiorito about Bernie Sanders and Melinda Gates. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
There's nothing like EWTN's National Catholic Register. Revealing, engaging, inspiring. The most comprehensive news of the day from a Catholic perspective, with the moral authority that comes from being faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. And in the words of our founder, Monsignor Matthew Smith, a paper that will always be loyal to the Church and has no selfish axe to grind. Because the truth when the Register was founded in 1927 is still the truth today. The award-winning National Catholic Register helps readers engage the culture with confidence in the saving and sanctifying gospel of Jesus Christ. Get 6 free issues today by ordering online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. That's 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I am joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host here on Register Radio. Melinda Gates, wife of Microsoft founder Bill Gates, has a new book out, The Moment of Lift, How Empowering Women Changes the World, in which she writes about helping the poor across the globe. Her book promotes widespread use of artificial contraception as a vehicle for empowering women. Our next guest writes, Gates is a puzzle. She is passionate about contraception, and yet she also professes to have a great love for her Catholic faith. Joining us now is Mary Hallin Fiorito, the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington. Mary formerly served in the Chicago Archdiocese for more than 28 years, including time serving as the first female vice chancellor for that archdiocese. In the last years of Cardinal George's time in the archdiocese, Mary was his executive assistant. Mary, welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
So you wrote this great piece recently. It's called Melinda Gates is Wrong, Birth Control Isn't Poverty Control. And it was for a week at least part of our trending news on the website. It's a compelling article, and it starts, well, let's first say it's a very serious topic, but you start with a bit of comedy. You quote, or you reference at least, the movie Airplane, which is just a classic. Describe the scene and how that relates to Melinda Gates.
Well, you know, that was the most fun about writing this article, as I got to work in one of my all-time favorite movies, Airplane. But, you know, as I was reading Melinda Gates' book, I couldn't stop thinking of this particular scene. And it's when, you know, the two main characters are Peace Corps volunteers, and they're assigned to a fictitious tribe, the Malumbos, in a part of Africa. And, you know, they go there, they're all, you know, starry-eyed and well-intended, and, you know, bring ridiculous Western norms into their work among the people. And the scene I particularly referenced was, you know, the woman bringing in Tupperware and having a little Tupperware party for, you know, telling the African women of the Malumbo tribe, you know, this will help keep your hot dog buns fresh for over a month. And they're looking at her. They don't even know what to do with the, you know. And I thought this is, it struck me. I do think a lot of that movie, why it's so funny, is because it kind of comes very close to the truth, right? And you have a lot of people who are well-intended, but because they're wealthier and because they're Western and because they're white, they think they know better, right? They think they know better about storing food than these African women who have done it in a traditional way for hundreds of years, right? So there is kind of, the joke is really on, obviously, on the Americans. And, you know, what my friend Uju Ekerocha calls, you know, philanthropic racism. So you go with the best intent and with your money, your Western aid, But really, what's at the heart of it is a racism, is your culture doesn't know better because you do things differently from the way that we do it. And so, you know, in reading Melinda Gates' book, I mean, again, puzzle is really probably the best adjective to describe that entire book, because she's so conflicted. I don't know any philanthropist who writes a book about contraception and then literally spends two chapters talking about how Catholic she is and how her mom went to marriage encounter with her dad and her mom goes to daily mass and I'm so Catholic. And she actually uses this phrase, the Vatican attacked me. And I thought, I'm like, there was an encyclical about you? What are you talking about? And then it turned out to be like a story in L'Osservatore Romano. And I'm like, that's not the Vatican attacking you. I mean, and maybe that'll help you sell some books, Melinda, and it's a nice little headline for you. But that's not truthfully what occurred. And L'Osservatore Romano, rightly so, critiqued your book and critiqued some of the methods that are employed by the Gates Foundation in developing countries. You know, and those who are on the ground, I got a very nice letter from someone who works with the Haitian Project after the article appeared, and talking about, you know, how so much of what I said echoed with their work in Haiti, saying, you know, people, these Western aid organizations come in and they focus on education for young girls. And they have only, in all their years working there, had two girls under the age of 21 get pregnant before they were 21 and married. And they said, you know why? Because we keep them in school. And we make sure that they have jobs when they get out of school. It's education that delays, you know, early births or, you know, a birth before families are ready to support the child financially. That is the key. It's education. It's not contraception. And so, you know, Melinda Gates may, and again, I can't see into her heart. I do believe she has compassion. She talks about a number of very heartbreaking stories in the book, but yet her response to that isn't one that is consistent with the dignity of the human person as the church understands it. And, you know, to spend two chapters talking about, well, I've really examined my conscience, and I think that the rhythm method, that's actually the phrase that she uses, which no one's used in the natural family planning business, if you will, for 40 years, but this is how low her knowledge of what the church actually teaches about family planning and about fertility-based awareness methods is, that she's using a term that was, you know, out of date 40 years ago. But she said, you know, my well-formed conscience says that I'm doing the right thing. But without any reference whatsoever to sitting down with people who are really expert on this, like an Uju Ekeocha or like a Janet Smith or like, you know, like Marguerite Duane, the doctor who runs a large fertility-based awareness family planning method in Washington there. You know, people who are really could explain to her why what the church teaches is better off, and it lifts all boats, right? Because it calls men responsibility, too.
Mary, you are the Cardinal George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy. Cardinal George, who you knew very well, I know, once famously said that we do not alleviate poverty by exterminating the poor. And right. There's a kind of underlying philosophy in much of what Melinda's saying, but in particular Bernie Sanders, who stunned a lot of people the other night at the CNN, I think it was a town hall, with his comments on trying to export abortion to the third world on a mammoth level. Talk about this sort of worldview of that ideological colonization that Pope Francis is warning about.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was, I think that was rather a stunning moment. And I was glad to see that so many news outlets picked up Bernie Sanders' comments. They were rather shocking, you know, just in their baldness, if you will, you know, that this is the intent. We're going to, you know, export abortion to the Mexico City policy and other, you know, U.S. governmental aid. Because this is how we'll solve poverty in developing countries, is by making sure, as he put it, you know, women have the right to control their own bodies. But as, you know, people who are there on the ground, the African nations, for example, you know, there was a Pew study not long ago that showed that upwards of 90% of most people, men and women alike in African countries, reject abortion wholesale. They do not want it in their countries. They would not practice it if it was legal. And unfortunately, what happens, and this is something I think Pope Francis has spoken about very forcefully, is that when Western nations go in and hold out that little carrot of the aid, right? So here's fresh water, and here's some new school books, and look, right next door we have a family planning clinic. Why don't you, you know, you have a woman who may not be able to feed her child that week. And so when that is held out as an incentive, you know, anyone who's a mom who's listening to this will understand, sure, of course, I'm going to look at this and consider this and perhaps even do it if it means my child will be fed and given some clean water and maybe a pair of shoes this week. week. So it's such a devious way to go at it. But I was grateful that Sanders at least was very honest about who he is and what he plans to do.
Right,
I think that was refreshing. He didn't couch it as President Obama would often do it in nuance or, you know, in euphemisms. He said it straight up. And so I'm looking forward to a time when he can be questioned more directly on what his intent would really be and how he would plan on, you know, making sure that these women had abortions. Would we use forced abortions like they do in China? Would we? I mean, how does he plan
it's,
to make
it's
sure
so,
that, America, that you know, women in developing countries get these abortions he seems so fond of?
It seems so important to really see what they stand for, and we recently had an article that did exactly that. 2020 Democrats back funding abortion overseas with taxpayer dollars by Loretta Brown. Mary, I want to ask you a little bit more, though, if you don't mind staying on. You have mentioned, and I might butcher her name because it rolls off of your tongue so well, Ubuntu Ekocha?
Yeah, so it's Obianuju is her first name.
Obianuju.
By Uju and Ekocha. Yeah.
Obianuju Ekocha.
You had her on before? She wrote the book Target Africa.
If we have not had her on Register Radio, we have done a wonderful profile of her. She's the founder and president of Culture of Life Africa.
Right.
A wonderful woman, biomedical scientist, right, in the UK.
Right.
Very smart, and she defends life in Africa. She defends the sanctity of life, marriage, motherhood, and families. Just really an amazing person. We probably should have her on.
She's coming to Chicago in 2 weeks, actually, to speak at a pregnancy center dinner here. So I've met her before, but I'll be able to spend a little more quality time with her when she's here.
Excellent. I was so glad you brought her up because we did have this profile on her. It's called Pro-Life in Africa. What we hold in common is this value for family. And I was thinking of her especially as she tweeted out just so frustrated with Bernie Sanders, but also like you saying, this is who they are. This is what they want. Be aware so that you know how to vote and you know how to judge their intentions correctly. But, you know, one of the things that the whole conversation about Melinda Gates and her being Catholic, I wanted to bring up was, so she has said that she knows the Catholic teaching, and she's argued with Catholic officials, some of whom agree with her, about how arcane the position is. She said she doesn't even know a Catholic who follows the teaching on contraception.
Well,
that was
the line in the book that most struck me. She didn't know one woman in her entire life, and that presumably includes her mother, and I think she's one of five or six children herself, who didn't use contraception during their during their marriage. And so I found that if you have really sat down with experts, then really in fairness, she should have named them. She should have said, I met with X, Y, and Z. It sounds she could not possibly have met with the people who are really doing work in this field, Jeanette, because she refers to the church's teaching as the rhythm method. And and that is just simply a term no one has used. I mean, I know it's occasionally used interchangeably with you know, the program that Georgetown University came up with, the beads method, and it's a calendar method, which has been very successful, though, in developing countries because, again, it uses things that people in those nations are accustomed to using. You know, and you know, Uju points this out very beautifully, you know, women in developing nations don't run to CVS for everything. You know, they don't have access.
Right.
Pharmacists and doctors on call. And so, you know, when a woman in an African country gets a blood clot from, you know, the birth control pill, she doesn't call 911, she dies. I mean, that's what happens.
It's that
and
serious,
side effects. Yeah, and there are side effects to contraceptives, to oral contraceptives in particular, hormonal ones, that are very serious, not just for the individual woman, but also for the environment. And this is something, you know, Pope Francis talks about, the water in Laudato Si, right? The water supplies. He doesn't specifically get into contamination, but he does very specifically say in Laudato Si, the problem to ending poverty is not to take the lives of poor people.
Right.
That is
exactly.
Absolutely inconsistent with the gospel. And, you know, you wonder, I was so hoping, you know, my like little pie-in-the-sky thoughts here as I was writing that article that maybe Melinda Gates would see it or someone would show it to her. I know there's a Franciscan priest that is apparently quite close to her and her husband. I would just love to get a couple of experts, I mean, people who really do know this field, to sit down with her and maybe to have a couple of hours with her to say, we don't, you know, we're not questioning you, that you are saying that you were untruthful and saying that you met with church leaders, but we just are having a very, very difficult time believing that the teaching was fully explained to you and was explained to you. Because, you know, there are quite a few Catholics who just don't understand it and maybe had the best intentions. But, you know, if you were a priest of a certain age, you know, you probably didn't get a whole lot other than reading Humana Vitae. You didn't get a whole lot of education in the seminary on natural family planning, on, you know, birth spacing, on any of that sort of stuff, whereas now it's a fairly regular part of seminary training, right? OBGYNs go in and they say this is how the nat... I mean, I spoke at a Humana Vitae 50th anniversary conference last year, and two doctors gave a presentation on the female reproductive system and how NFP works, and she was just asking a bunch of seminarians there, and she was asking questions, and didn't they know the answer to every single one because they'd already had this in seminary?
Right, that's wonderful.
So
and
you
know,
they could distinguish between the different methods, etc.
Yeah, your current work at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, I think, gets to the heart of some of this, and which is just making it known. You know, these advances in women's health don't all have to refer back to this contraceptive mentality. And I think you do a lot of work with that. I saw the books that you've worked on. The latest, I believe, was Promise and Challenge, Catholic Women Reflect on Feminism, Complementarity, and the Church. And I think Catholics need to know more about this. I have to close. I added this little extra for our podcast that we put online, which is separate from the on-air part of the show. But I did want to make sure we referenced your work there at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. What else are you working on, just quickly? Do you have something in the works?
Well, a couple of the things I've been working on recently, I have a great interest in perinatal hospice, which is hospice for women who are diagnosed, their unborn children diagnosed, with a life-limiting condition in utero, so something like a trisomy 18 or an anencephalic baby, and it's a program that allows, it, just as you would with a dying adult or a dying child, hospice to happen before the birth begins, and so that families, you know, so many families faced with an adverse prenatal diagnosis are given one option, and that's termination. And many women are told, and I had this happen to one of my close friends, which is how I became sort of interested in the topic. I mean, she was carrying twins. One twin had a very rare form of spina bifida. It was very unlikely she was going to live more than a few hours, but she was told unless she aborted the sick twin, the healthy twin would die too.
Wow.
And can you imagine, you know, having that Sophie's Choice put in front of you?
Right.
But she went, and no one mentioned perinatal hospice to her. She went, she was a hospital administrator by training, and went to the hospital library and went back to the doctor and said, wait, you didn't tell me about this. So they agreed to do it a little bit grudgingly, but, you know, she had her whole family in the room. Her daughter was bad. Her little son was fine. He just graduated from Carnegie Mellon with
of
his class on the football team. And her daughter lived 6 hours, but, you know, she was held by all of her grandparents. She was baptized. You know, it was, they have little pictures of her next to her twin, and she said she often feels her daughter's presence, and she, you know, and so when you think of, you know, she said, well, of course we were sad, but I've never had a moment's regret about the way we handled Mary Bernadette's birth and death, and...
Wow, it sounds like another story, it sounds like another story for the Register, Mary.
Well, I'd love to do that. The more people who are made aware of this as an option, I think you'd have far... I believe that the statistics somewhere up of 80% of women who are told about perinatal hospice will choose it over termination.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, then we'll talk more.
Listeners can follow me at Mary Fiorito on Twitter or find me on Facebook at Mary Helen Fiorito.
Mary, you've been enlightening. We hope to see you a lot more at the Register. I am grateful for what you've written, and I invite our readers to go to ncregister.com for more news, analysis, and commentary. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.